Every week in preparation for Against the Grain right here on KTRU 96.1 FM, we have a production meeting, and a lot of exciting stuff went down at this week's on Monday. The entire staff was there. Don't know if that's ever happened, and it made for a slightly chaotic discussion. The not one, not two, but three tables we had pushed together were more or less divided into two conversations, and I was stuck in the middle. I was forced to choose whether to listen to my left side, where Chloe, Julian, and Brandon were breaking down the sports I spent the most time watching, the NHL and the WNBA, whereas on my right, Andrew, Max, and David were arguing about whether or not the Miami Heat have anyone on their roster worthy of starting in an NBA game. You're probably talking to your radio right now asking, Ian, what about Tyler Hero? To which I say I agree with you. With all this going on the show today, where are we headed? Barcelona. Do we have to? Yes, we have to. If you know, you know, and you're in good company. Save the listeners from my shenanigans. Chloe, roll the music. Let's talk some ball.
This is KTRU on 96.1, KTRU, LP, Houston, and streaming live on your phone and on the web at ktru.org. Back to you, Ian.
Good morning, Houston. I'm Ian Kleppinger, and welcome back to Against the Grain on KTRU 96.1 FM, the Rice University student-run radio show where we break down everything going on in the world of Rice athletics and the broader sports scene from across the city of Houston. You could listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM, or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, go ahead and follow us at ktru.sports on Instagram and at ktrusports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works, and we do not want you to miss out. If you have a question for the staff, feel free to DM us on either of those platforms or drop a note to ktrusports@gmail.com. That's ktrusports@gmail.com, all lowercase. We want to know what you want to know so we can answer it on the air. We've gotten an influx of emails recently. Love to see it. If you want to be in the hopefully soon to come mailbag or have us look at your craziest sports take, thoughts on the show, anything you want to share with us, make sure and throw it in there as soon as you can. Throughout the next hour, you'll be hearing from a whole team of student hosts. I'll be getting us started with our first segment, Around the Hedges. Here at Rice University, it is common to say that the greater city of Houston is beyond the hedges. So to start off each episode of Against the Grain, we go around the hedges for a quick review of the biggest sports moments of the past week from both Rice and the city of Houston. We have big news on the baseball diamond with the Rice Owls once again, and it's actually better this week. They took last weekend's series against the Bulls of South Florida after a tough 3-14 loss on Friday, rebounded well with a 15-3 win on Saturday and a 5-2 win on Sunday. They lost midweek to Houston on Tuesday night, and their weekend series this weekend is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, as opposed to the normal Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They're taking on the Memphis Tigers on the road in Memphis, Tennessee. They won on Thursday night, 10-5. The Friday game has not been played at the time of recording this, but you will be able to look up the score when you listen to this on Saturday, and the final game will be at Saturday on noon. Interesting storyline that happened in the Sunday game against South Florida last Sunday the 13th. There was a bee's nest, not a hive, which is apparently an important distinction, in the South Florida dugout about the time of first pitch. But lucky for the Rice Owls, Joseph Elam, owner of Bee Removal of Houston, was in attendance and came down to save the day. We actually have a clip, I believe, from the broadcast to give you a quick summary of what went down.
And here's that replay. There, see, our video folks are on top. Guy goes up there. Everybody's standing away from it. I don't know if he has no protective gloves, and he just grabs a hold of it and throws it down. You can tell he does this for a living.
So, in case you missed that, Joseph Elam went into the dugout in plain clothes. He was wearing overalls and a ball cap, and just grabbed the hive slash nest with his hand and ripped it off the ceiling of the dugout that it was hanging from, and just carried it out, basically. And he said in an interview later that he got stung a few times, but it was nothing too bad. Didn't bother to go get any protective gear to lay the game at all. He just went down there and grabbed it and took it out. Rice AD Tommy McClelland later tweeted a picture of him carrying a crate that bees, you know, were stored in their hives with beekeepers that was full of the bees that he took from the hive. So he was able to rescue most of that nest and transport them safely away from the ballpark. The game was only delayed by 11 minutes, which was pretty good for something like this. If you recall, last MLB season, a Dodgers Diamondbacks game in Arizona was delayed over 2 hours because of a swarm of bees around their hive on the backstop, and a beekeeper had to be called in in full protective gear and took over 2 hours to remove the bees from the net behind home plate. That was huge headlines last year. He eventually threw out the ceremonial first pitch once the game was finally able to get underway. But great stuff from Joseph Elam of Bee Removal of Houston, who was able to save what could have been a multiple-hour delay in Rice's baseball game on Sunday. If you have any bee removal needs, I'm sure he would be happy to take your call. Not sponsored. Moving on to tennis, both our Rice tennis teams are in the middle of American Athletic Conference tournament play. The men finished their regular season by beating UAB 4-0 to finish fifth in the AAC. Their first match in the tournament is going on at the time of recording this against four-seeded Tulsa. If they win, they will play on Saturday at 10 a.m. That's the day this episode comes out, against the winner of the number 8 Wichita State Shockers and the number 1 South Florida Bulls. On the women's side, they won on senior day in their final game, also 4-0 against Middle Tennessee State. They finished second in the AAC after their monster of a season. They will take on the 7 seed Tulane at 3 p.m. today, today being Friday, and then tomorrow on Saturday, the day you're listening to this, at 2 p.m., if they win, they will take on the winner of Memphis and Charlotte, the 6 and 3 seeds, respectively. If either Owls team wins on Saturday, they will play on Sunday in the championship game. Those times are yet to be determined, but they can be watched on ESPN Plus if you want to tune into some Owls championship tennis. I would not be surprised if the women especially make it to Sunday. In a slightly surprising turn of events, there was a Beer Bike Makeup event scheduled. It is tonight, which tonight being Friday. It has been referred to by the university as Bike Bike, I kid you not, as opposed to Beer Bike, because there is no beer involved. If you're not familiar, Beer Bike is the biggest tradition here on Rice's campus, I would say. Garrett described it as the Rice University Super Bowl, which I think is accurate. Big bike race, relay race of biking legs and chugging water/beer. Every residential college at Rice participates. It's a huge event, takes a whole day, and most of the races this year were rained out a few weeks ago. So tonight, the 1 women's heat and 2 men's heats that were not able to be completed will be completed in a more or less alternative fashion. There will only be 6 legs in the relay of bikers and chuggers instead of the normal 8 of each, and only half of the pit crew will be allowed to be on there, which has kind of changed the way the bikers have to start themselves. And the start, I've heard from a few bikers I know, has become quite a variable, because they have to push off themselves and then clip their like clip shoe into their pedals, which if you miss your clip, then like you can fall really far behind someone who got their clip in right away, because they're able to start pedaling with like way more force than you were able to while you're still trying to get your other foot kind of attached to your pedal there. The event is being live streamed at Rice, and most colleges, I believe, are having watch parties in their commons. So it should be exciting stuff, although not nearly what we would have hoped to see with Beer Bike. We will keep you posted on results, or if anything else unexpected might happen, which certainly is not out of the realm of possibilities. Let's move on now to our hometown Houston Rockets. We haven't mentioned them in a couple weeks extensively. They ended the season on a 3-game skid after 2 impressive wins. If you recall, a couple weeks ago, I outlined that their remaining 5 games in the regular season were going to be tough. They beat the Thunder 125-111, a game in which Jalen Green dropped 34, and then went to beat who we now know is their playoff opponent, the Warriors, 106-96, before losing to the Clippers, Lakers, and Nuggets to finish out the regular season. Down the stretch, they had a lot of injuries. Jabari Smith Jr., Tari Eason, Jayshon Tate, just to name a few, all missed time. Everyone was back for the final game against the Nuggets. Their playoff series against the Warriors will start at home on Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central Time, and will go on throughout the course of the week. It will not be concluded by the time you hear from us again, so maybe we'll have more info for you on it come then. But for now, we are going to get into an extensive breakdown of the Rockets and the NBA playoffs. And as you know, if you've listened to us talk about the Rockets before, you are sure in for a good time.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's finally time. After 82 games of ups and downs, depending on what team you root for, the NBA playoffs are here. Arguably the best playoffs in all of sports. And like Ian just touched on, it's time for a little Rockets debate, a little Jalen Green debate. Max, I want to start with you. I want to hear the case for the Rockets to come out of this series against their longtime rival Warriors. For context, this is the 5th time these teams are meeting in the playoffs in the last 10 years. So a lot of history here, and we're in store for a very interesting series. Why do you think the Rockets are going to take this one?
Yeah, you mentioned the history, but I think this series is pretty unique. This is a brand new Rockets team, really, in terms of the playoffs. And I'm not going to look at Jalen Green quite yet. I'm going to look at the roster as a whole and say the Rockets have a huge advantage on the bench and in their depth as a whole. Looking at the Warriors, I'm not really seeing too much outside of Steph and Jimmy. And I'm looking at the Rockets and seeing a plethora of great defenders led by their leading scorer Jalen Green, as well as this new double big lineup with Sengun and Steven Adams, who can really punish the likes of Draymond Green and Kevon Looney, who are simply not at that level that Sengun and Steven Adams are. David, you seem interested to get involved here.
Yeah, man, I just don't know about that. Like,
get him.
As much as this Rockets team is very well improved, they are honestly one of the few teams with a guy who can actually really guard Steph and Amen Thompson.
Fair point.
They are still just not really prepared for a setting like this. The Rockets, we really haven't seen them. We have not seen much of them in the playoffs. They have not really been tested. And in their regular season games, they've kind of been just very so-so, especially from guys like Jalen Green and Sengun.
So I'm gonna stop you right there and talk about that so-so. 50 wins, not so-so, especially in a tough Western Conference. And you talk about not being prepared. They have one of the best coaches in the league, someone I'd say is easily a top five coach in the league, Ime Udoka, who is going to have them ready. He's going to have a great game plan, like we saw in their last regular season meeting where Steph Curry was completely neutralized. And not only do we have Amen Thompson, you have the likes of Tari Eason, Dylan Brooks, and other guys who you can throw at Steph and Jimmy and really wear them down in a potentially long seven-game series.
I think you definitely have some points there. You just have to be careful when you have these defenders on the wing, such as Jabari Smith, Eason, as well as Thompson. Obviously, you don't want Jimmy getting them into foul trouble because that obviously puts you at a disadvantage. You're going to be losing the depth that you so much cared about. And so with that in mind, it's important for the Rockets to be able to obviously contain Curry. That should be like their number one game plan. And they're going to be able to make it's going to be really hard for them, I think, especially with Jalen Green's inconsistencies, for them to, like, I feel like there's definitely...
Let's stop.
There's definitely going to be a game that he's going to be cold.
Jalen Green, inconsistent. Jalen Green's the youngest guard in NBA history to play the full 82-game season consecutively and average 20-plus points per game.
Okay, there's a reason why that's the system.
What's he averaging against the Rockets?
Okay. There's a reason why it's an average. He has ups and downs.
Inconsistent about showing up every single night of the season.
What's he averaging against the Warriors?
Points per game.
What's he averaging against the Warriors?
Why don't you tell me, David?
13.1 points per game on 31 field goal percentage and 21 from the three.
What's their record against the Warriors?
I can tell you that.
Since the trade, I'm pretty sure it's even. I want to hop in. Max, congratulations on cherry picking one of the craziest stats I've ever heard. The youngest guard ever to play all 82 and average over 20.
Jacob's bringing up consistency. Nothing says consistent like averaging 20 points per night every single night.
I mean, okay, he had good injury luck this year, and his points averaged out to over 20. An average of points per game doesn't really show the variation, which exactly, is exactly like what we're talking about. A little statistics 101 for you there, pal.
Whoa. But if we're gonna talk about that, then let's point out that when Jalen Green scores 30 plus, the Rockets are 13-1.
But have they ever scored 30? Against the Warriors.
Wait. Hold on. He's only scored 30 14 times this year.
Bro's a starting
point. Only? How many times?
Only? That's all he does is score, and he's only gotten 30 14 times in 82 games, so he's doing this less than 20% of his games getting 30.
How many times do you want him to score 30 on a well-rounded, balanced team that has other scorers like Sengun? You have Fred.
Okay,
Van
let's
Leet
talk about this.
Offense.
Let's talk about this. So we're talking about a well-rounded team. Yeah, a well-rounded team overall, but a well-rounded offense, I don't think that's a good claim. This is a great transition offense led by Amen and Tari, but their half-court offense is bottom 10 in the league. And I'm not trying to hate on the Rockets too much because I think this is going to be a seven-game series probably. I think this is going to be really competitive. Yeah. But when we're talking about well-rounded or great offense, that is not what the Rockets are in the half court when the game actually slows down, which is what we typically see in the playoffs. They struggle, and that's when your go-to scorer should be able to take over and actually make things happen. And that's my issue with Jalen Green.
And that's when I believe he will be able to shine. I think he has a coach who's going to put him in the right positions in the half court to really make him shine. I don't think he necessarily has to take over consistently in the regular season because they're playing this more transition style. I think his game is actually going to translate more than people think through the slower paced playoff style.
But I mean, then we're going to compare that to guys like playoff Jimmy and Steph. Like, it's not a competition.
See, that's the thing for me in this series is like, we have all these questions about like the Rockets offense, and you've talked about like the Rockets defense and how like, yeah, they do have probably the best personnel in the league to slow down Steph and Jimmy. But at the same time, those are guys you can only like slow down versus the Rockets offense. Like, I wonder who can actually get going, because Draymond is the perfect person to put on Şengün. Obviously, Jalen Green's pretty inconsistent. I don't think you want Fred VanVleet to be your leading scorer in the playoff series in the year of our Lord 2025. Like, I have some questions. I think you make like a fair point, though, about like the transition offense is still going to be good, obviously. And I think Jalen Green will have a decent series. This is going to be close. To me, let's make predictions real quick. I'm going to go with Warriors in seven.
I think I would also take Warriors in seven.
I don't see anything wrong with that take. It's definitely going to be a little bit more grueling. I don't think there will be high-scoring games, but I think that's where the Rockets are going to lose their edge, and it's going to be being banged up over the course of the...
No one has more respect for playoff Jimmy than me as a Heat fan. But the rest of this roster is terrible. It's bad. And the Rockets will be able to take advantage of that with their physicality over the course of a longer series, and the Rockets will get it done in seven.
What do you think is the weakest point this Warriors team has?
Yeah.
Any sort of depth at all.
I mean, their top three is...
Scoring is a serious issue, I think. Outside of Steph and Jimmy, you don't really have any scoring.
But you could say that exact same thing about the Rockets.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have any, like, playoff
experience. And then we talk about, like...
The Rockets have, what, seven guys averaging over 10 points a game?
Okay, but they have... It's, like, it's a completely different environment. This is their first time, like, in a while.
So if you're good over the whole regular season, we're just going to throw all that out the window.
We are saying it's going to go to seven games. You know?
Okay,
like, we're not saying they're going to get spanked.
They're the two seed, and what, they have three more wins than the Warriors this year? Like, yeah, being the two seed is great, and like, this is a great season for the Rockets, but let's not act like they're like 10 games ahead of the Warriors, and they've just been a dominant regular season team. A 50-win two seed is pretty weak in, like, when we're looking at historical context. Like, last year, there were four teams with over 55 wins in the West. This is pretty weak to be a two seed. So, I don't know. But let's keep it moving. Let's go on now to the number three and number six matchup in the West. We got the Lakers and Timberwolves. Who's got some thoughts here?
I mean...
Jacob's got thoughts.
go Lakers. You know, we're going to win. I mean, it's like our game plan is mostly going to be focused on making sure that Ant is contained. I feel like Ant's going to be like a big person to keep an eye on. Obviously, with that, you're going to have double teaming. You're going to have blitzing. You're going to make sure that he's in trying to contain him, he's going to be kind of forced to either make tough shots or he's going to be forced to like give it up. And that's where you need like their role players to more step up. You're going to have Naz Reid probably going to have a good series. He's probably going to eat up Jackson Hayes. So I wouldn't expect too much to see from Jackson Hayes this series. Probably not a lot from Rudy Gobert either, just because he doesn't play that well against the small ball in the past. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. And that's going to obviously hurt them around the rim. But I think that's something that they got to consider.
Really, you threw some shade at your boy Jackson Hayes. Normally you're very upbeat about him.
No, I mean, I have faith on him during the regular season. But I mean, like, then again, Hayes, you know?
I think you make a good point on Rudy Gobert. He does not have the offensive skill set to take advantage of this small ball. He should be so much better than Jackson Hayes that he should be able to take advantage and score at will, but he simply does not have that skill set, which is why I do agree that Rudy Gobert will probably help the Lakers more than he'll help the Wolves in this series.
Dang.
And okay, that's a little brutal.
That's a little too much.
Come on, bro. Like, chill.
And the big thing is how do the Wolves defend the big three of the Lakers? They really don't have the guys to do that when LeBron and Luka are orchestrating switches and getting the matchups they want.
Sorry, Max, did you say LeBron?
They got Luka, Don, Aries, and then LeBron, the real big three. They gave up baby because they needed change. And you got to say his name. Talking about the man on the Lakers, LeBron. I'm asking you to say
We're talking about the man
never
on the
old.
Lakers, LeBron.
LeBron.
Well, I don't know how we follow that, honestly. If you're listening to this, I hope you feel grateful that your ears were just blessed with that song. But yeah, I think it's going to be really tough for the Wolves to slow down this like big three, like you said, Max, of Reeves, Braun, and Luka. We saw it last year. The Wolves cannot slow down Luka. Like, pretty much no one can to some degree. Like, in the playoffs, the only person you can make a case for is maybe Lu Dort. Jaden McDaniels, who's supposed to be an elite defender, is straight barbecue chicken. Anthony Edwards is straight barbecue chicken. Like, Luka is going to light them up. I think it's just a matter of how much can they contain Reeves and Braun. And if they can, like, have those guys be held in check to some degree, I think that's the only chance the Wolves have of winning this series.
Yeah, and I think one of the issues or potential flaws in the Lakers is that, like, defense is, can you take advantage of Luka and Austin Reeves? Like, those are two not so great defenders. I just don't see the Wolves as having enough guys to actually take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Don't see Julius Randle as that guy. Ant can only do so much. I think this is a series where people really grow to respect his game, but realize that he is a little bit helpless.
Yeah, definitely. I know, like, when you have Julius Randle, like, you're probably going to get him open threes to start off the series. Like, or maybe, like, not that bad, but, like, definitely you're not going to contest those shots. No. And even on the flip side, the Lakers are going to try to exploit Conley. And so you also have to be careful about that, and they're not completely torching him in that aspect.
Yeah, I mean, if they're playing Randle and Gobert together for any of these minutes, it's going to be really tough for the Wolves to score, I think, if Randle's three ball is not falling, because the entire attention of the Lakers defense is going to be on Ant. And we've seen this year, J.J. Redick is a really good defensive coach and has found ways to slow down some of the best players in the league. Like, what comes to mind first for me is the Nuggets game a couple weeks ago, where they were putting two on Jokic off ball and denying him the ball from getting it in the low post. I'm guessing J.J. Redick is cooking up something similar for this series against Ant, because if they slow down Ant, there's just no way the Timberwolves can pull this out. Do we want to go to predictions now real quick? I'll start off. I'm going Lakers in six.
Yeah, I'm also feeling Lakers in six. I just think they're going to get out firepowered.
Lakers in five.
Lakers in five.
Wow. No Wolves lovers. I think Ant's going to have a good series, hopefully, but we'll see. All right, let's move on to what is the most interesting matchup in the West, in my opinion. No, it is not Thunder versus Mavs or Grizzlies. It is the Nuggets versus the Clippers, the 4-5 matchup with a healthy Kawhi, maybe, healthy Harden, going up against the best player in the league, the Joker. What do we think?
I think let's just get ahead of the health conversation right now. Like, this, we haven't seen a healthy Kawhi for a long time now.
The last time he played all the games in the first round was the bubble, if I'm not mistaken. Or no, it was 2021, actually.
Yeah.
When they made the Western Conference Finals run. But he was hurt for that.
Now, if he is there, then this becomes a very competitive series. And the Clippers have a real chance to go far. But, I mean, at the end of the day, we have someone as exceptional as Jokic who is going to give them hell at every time.
We're going to skip past the Kawhi injury stuff. And I'm not going to say, if he is there, this is a competitive series. If he is there, the Clippers win this series. And I don't think it's particularly close.
Wow.
I can definitely resonate with that.
I respect Jokic. He's the best player in the league. It's not even close. Give him the MVP again.
Tell him.
But the Clippers actually have some depth, and the Nuggets simply have nothing.
Yeah.
They have nothing.
The Nuggets front, it was so deserving. Michael Malone should not have been fired, but there, who was it, Calvin Booth, he deserved to go. This has been some of the worst roster management over the past 3 years since their title run of putting, like, any sort of talent around Jokic, letting Bruce Brown go for nothing, letting KCP walk. You basically just said, hey, Jokic, please save us, because we're going to give you absolutely no one on the bench. We're going to hope that the mid players we drafted pick it up. Yeah, I think this is criminal, and I'm kind of with you, Max. I think if Kawhi stays healthy, the Clippers take this one. So let's go predictions. All give me Clips in seven. Jokic is still a dog. He's going to give Zubac the work. It'll be close, but I think Clippers take it.
I'm going to go Clippers in six.
Bassard always stealing my ideas, you know? Like, I was just going to say that.
Mm. Oh, David wants to pick.
I mean, it is Jokic.
It's
but I think I have to take Clips in six. In seven.
Okay, I like it. We're not going to talk about the 1 versus 8 matchup at the time of recording. It has not been decided. Whoever's tuning in for Mavs versus Grizzlies, bless your soul. Let's go over to the East. I think there's only two interesting series we really want to talk about. First, let's do the 3 versus 6 matchup, the New York Knicks versus the Detroit Pistons. What are y'all's thoughts?
Shout out Cade Cunningham. An incredible season. I think he deserves a shout, if not deserves to be on the first team All-NBA team.
Wow.
Whoa.
First team All-NBA.
Oh,
my Lord.
But in the end, the Piston, he doesn't, they're too reliant on him to generate offense, kind of like the Nuggets are on Jokic, just not to that same level. And I think the Knicks just have such a great starting five that it's just going to be too much.
Yeah, to me, this isn't a question of who's going to win. It's a question of how many games can the Pistons maybe take off of them? Because outside of Cade, wow, this roster is bleak. And that's saying something, considering last year, the roster was much, much worse. Tobias Harris, Tim Hardaway Jr., Malik Beasley, Jalen Duren, that is the supporting cast right now. We have one of the best young stars in the league. So I'm thinking Cade is going to steal one, just because he is so darn good, and I think he's going to elevate his game a lot in the playoffs, but there's just no way they can slow down the Knicks that much. Give me Knicks in five.
I will also be taking Knicks. I think in six, I think there can just be one of these guys, Tobias Harris, Malik Beasley, Tim Hardaway Jr., is going to have an explosion, because they always do, and then they shoot 0-for-7 the next game. But
Tim Hardaway Jr., classic.
A classic. They might be able to snag a game or two, so I will take the Knicks in six.
Coming into this, I actually thought this was the series that was most likely to generate an upset in the East. So I'm not convinced that the Pistons are going to win in seven. So if they win, which is still unlikely, but I'm gonna just go against the contrary and say Pistons in six.
He's
Pistons
bold.
In six. Bold. Tom Thibodeau is not going to stand for losing. If he has to play his starting five all 48 minutes, he will. Give me the Knicks in five.
He will. All right, let's go real quick. Rapid fire here. Bucks, Pacers. What are y'all most interested to see in the series? Jacob?
With a... that's a good question.
Wow. All right, let's go to Max. Way to be ready.
So this, I think this is classic great team versus great player. The Pacers have wonderful chemistry. The Bucks have Giannis.
Yeah.
I like the Pacers.
David?
I think Giannis is spanking the Pacers.
Wow. Jacob?
Nah, okay, yeah, I'm going to have to slow you down there. I know that the Pacers' offense is elite, and their defense has improved greatly this year. So last year, a lot of people said they obviously had like a little bit more of a Mickey run. And Dame's going to be coming back, but I don't think it soon enough. Because is he going to be playing the entire series?
I actually do think soon enough. Yeah. There was some news that dropped the other day that apparently he is healing from this blood clot way, way, way quicker than expected, and he might be back in round one.
They gave him something, but...
Yeah, I don't know.
if Dame comes back, I'm going to give it to Bucks in seven. If not, I'm going to have Pacers in six.
Okay. I'm going to say Bucks in seven. I just think last year the Pacers won. Giannis was not healthy. Dame was not healthy. We were looking at a Chris Middleton masterclass. Even if it's just Giannis, we're about to see a 2018 Braun kind of run.
Mm-hmm. I will be also taking Bucks in seven for when Dame comes back.
All right. Real quick, let's just preview, because we didn't talk about Cavs, Celtics. Those teams are obviously going to win in the first round. There's not a question in any of our minds. I want to get a quick reaction from each of you. Who comes out of the East, Cavs or Celtics?
First of all, shout out the Heat playing tonight as we record. They get in. Don't sleep on them to steal a couple games off the Cavs.
I will be sleeping. I might be in a coma.
But this is the Celtics year again, as much as it pains me to say it. They're simply too good. They hit the threes. Their balance on defense and offense is great. And Peyton Pritchard has taken yet another step.
I think it kind of comes down to how many games the Magic can steal from the Celtics, but maybe that might wear them down a little bit, where they're going to be a little bit slower against the Cavs. But so I think still the Celtics are going to come out.
Yeah, unfortunately, I also have the same predicament. I want to pick these Cavs so bad, but I think it'll still be the Celtics' dominance continuing.
I'll be the contrarian. We always ignore the signs of aggression from a championship team. We always give them all this grace. No team has repeated since the Warriors. I think the Celtics fall to the Cavs this year. Give me D. Mitch and Garland. All right. Since we've been talking a little ball, let's keep this up and talk about some of the role players that maybe you didn't hear us mention in the segment. It's time to do a little draft. It's going to be me and David versus Max and Jacob drafting non-All-Stars in the playoffs. First pick, why don't we give it, and this is, you can never have made an All-Star team to be in this draft, and you are in a playoff team, not a play-in team, unless that play-in team's already in at the time of recording. So why don't you all take the first pick, Jacob and Max?
The first pick, we're going to secure our front court and go with Chet Holmgren.
Makes sense. Makes sense. I say we take Franz then.
Yeah, we take Franz.
That's the play to me. We're going to leave center till the end. I don't think they're going to take two centers.
Yeah.
Should we go another guard to pair with Franz? Give us a little bit of spacing. Maybe Derek White. I think that's the best. Okay,
I'm feeling you.
Yeah, let's go Franz and Derek White. Elite defensive 1-2 punch there.
You guys have secured a great, great defensive start there. I still trust Chet in our front court, so we're going to get our guard and go with Austin Reeves.
Ooh. Yeah. Man on the Lakers. And y'all get another pick. Thank draft.
We're going to steal a page out of your book, go defense, and take Mikal Bridges.
Okay.
Oh, Bridges. Okay. I'm not worried about that at all. Bridges, we didn't have him ranked number one on our forward list. I'm thinking we keep up and just make a defensive masterclass of a team.
I want OG.
You want OG? That's who I was thinking. Yeah. All right, pencil us in for OG at the three. So far we have Franz Wagner, Derek White, and OG Anunoby. We are going to be a terrorist team on the defensive side of the ball. And some pretty good scoring, actually, and decent spacing for Franz. The question then, I think we wait. I mean, they're not going to take another center. Who's our favorite forward then? Do we want to go with Aaron Gordon, or do we want to go with the young man, Amen Thompson, and have OG play the four for us?
I want that terror twin. Give Amen us, Thompson.
Yeah. I like it. Let's take Amen Thompson, someone who can elevate his scoring too. Okay. The roster's looking good. Y'all are up. Final two picks for you guys.
We're gonna upgrade our defense and someone who's really improved this year and play a little bit of big boy basketball and take Zubac as our five. Pair him with Chet
at the four
and just dominate the front court.
Zubi. Interesting.
This is big boy basketball.
I'm so not moved by that. Anunoby's locking up Chet. No question.
This cap.
All right, who's your point guard?
I mean, we already have Austin Reeves. We're going to get...
Whoa. Do not disrespect Austin Reeves.
Austin Reeves is the primary creator. Uh-oh.
You don't even have a primary creator on your team.
We have Franz Wagner and Derek
Franz
White.
Wagner's on... The Magic are, like, one of the worst offenses in terms of, like, just stalling out for huge periods of the game. They couldn't even score on the Hawks for, nine minutes.
Okay, buddy. Okay. Outside of Franz and Paolo, they got a whole lot.
So we're going to get a great playoff riser and get Jamal Murray in our backcourt.
There we go.
That's a good pick. All right. We need to close it off. We need a center, or we could just play mega small ball and say screw them and do the exact opposite. We could take
Jackson Hayes still on the board.
Oh, we could take Hardenstein or Miles Turner. Jackson Hayes. Oh, that boy's so tough.
Damn.
What if instead though we just take Aaron Gordon, who's like 6'10", and have him play the five for us? I think he's given Zubac a lot of problems.
I was thinking him or Nas.
Oh, I think Aaron Gordon's better than Nas at this day. I mean, defensively, we're gonna have five elite defenders and then all guys that can shoot if we take Aaron Gordon.
I'll take your word.
All right, we're going Aaron Gordon. Final teams are Jacob and Max have Jamal Murray, Reeves, Mikal Bridges, Chet Holmgren, and Zubac. Me and David put together Franz, Derek White, Amen Thompson, OG Anunoby, and Aaron Gordon. Who is the decider? Oh my God,
that's a great question, Garrett. We've got the best basketball ball knower to judge this draft right here, and myself. So let's see here. So we've got the team.
I mean, this is easy.
David and Garrett with, you know, trying to please, you know, the Rockets fan in me, getting a man Thompson.
Y'all are better at every position.
You have Jamal Murray and Reeves as your defensive backcourt. That's barbecue chicken.
Quiet on set, boys.
Derek White is cooking them, boys.
All right, that's enough discourse. That's enough discourse, okay? You know?
Y'all are not scoring.
I'll be honest. I genuinely believe in offense over defense. And I think Jamal Murray, I've seen him break the hearts of Lakers fans, including my roommate TJ, too many times pick Jamal Murray and Jacob and Max's team.
Jamal Murray is
someone to run the offense.
Jamal Murray has been awful this year. We literally just talked about how the Nuggets have no one outside of Jokic, and now you're like, oh, Jamal Murray's pretty good.
We're about
good,
to have a brawl
huh?
in
player.
Studio
oh,
here.
You don't have a point
The voices
guard.
Have spoken. The voices have spoken. I do think Jacob and Max win this draft because David and Garrett's team just, I don't know where you're getting offense from. And I think,
when Kyle was out, Franz was averaging 25.
I think they got the size advantage, but let's throw it to Julian, who's going to calm us down a little and give us a PSA and promo. Julian.
I don't know if this would calm us down necessarily, as some of y'all who came to see it last night can attest, but phone rings, door chimes, in comes Weiss Tabletop Theaters production of Company. Yes, join us. I guess by the time that you'll be hearing us, hearing this episode, join us tonight at 8 p.m. in Weiss Commons to watch Rice's rendition of the beloved musical Company with music and lyrics by Stephen Sondheim. The story follows the lonely bachelor Bobby and his married friends as he reflects on relationships, love, friendship, and what it means to be alive on his 35th birthday. Go to @WeissTabletopTheater on Instagram for more information and fun previews. Tickets are free for Rice students and $5 for general admission. Again, that's tonight at 8 p.m. That will be our closing night for the performance in Weiss Commons. That's what it's really about. We opened last night. It was a great show. Some of us here were at the show yesterday. Brandon, if you could use one word to describe how the show made you feel yesterday.
Depressing. But it was great.
Wow.
What an endorsement.
It was so emotional, man.
Phenomenal endorsement, really. And yes, we do have a picture with quite a few of us at the show afterwards. It was quite great. As we move to the promo now, No Format is a music discovery radio show coming to you since 2020. Listen to songs from every musical style across space and time within the same hour. Sometimes it's deep dives, but much like weather in Texas, it's mostly unpredictable. Tune in every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. And that brings us to our next playoff preview segment. Some would like to argue here less interesting than the NBA, but I respectfully disagree. I think the NHL playoffs are the best treat that the American sports world gives to its fans in, I guess, from April through June. So let's kick it to me and Brandon to get started talking on the subject. I'm really excited. How we're going to do this is we have four tiers for all of the NHL playoff teams, and quickly we'll go through each team in the playoffs and see where they stack up against one another. So how about we get started, Brandon? Let's start with the East. Let's start with the Toronto Maple Leafs. What do we think about them this year?
So obviously with Toronto, great team, very star-studded. You have Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Nylander.
The core four is what they say up there in Toronto. Yep.
But, you know, the biggest thing going against them, their historical playoff demons, their history of being really bad in the playoffs, not winning playoff rounds.
Yeah, for those that don't know, they are like the Dallas Cowboys of the NHL. So much hype, super obnoxious fans, but basically have not won anything in a long, long time.
Additionally with that, Marner, who had a great season this year, historically has been atrocious in the playoffs. So that's another thing.
Future Vancouver Canuck Mitch Marner, might I say. But anyways, that's a different conversation. No, I agree with you, Brandon. I think the Toronto Maple Leafs, so they won their division this year, which is quite impressive when you consider that you have Titans like the Lightning and the Panthers in your division. But it's well known that the Maple Leafs have always been very good in the regular season, but always come up short in the postseason, whether that's due to inconsistent defense, inconsistent goaltending. They do have Joseph Woll this year, who they call him their wall up there in Toronto. But, so I usually would take them to flop in the first round, but they've got a good matchup. But I guess in terms of greater playoffs overall,
I'm not sure if we're going to agree here, but I think, I don't know, man. I think they could be a contender this year. I think the matchup, even though it's a battle of Ontario against the Ottawa Senators, which could get feisty, I think they are a better team than the Senators, and we've seen what they can do in the Atlantic Division this year. So I think they'd have a chance of beating the Lightning and Panthers, and then from there, who knows how far they could go. I see them as contenders, so let's put them in that second tier, but not quite reaching the Stanley Cup, I think.
I think I would have them there as well. I think, like you mentioned, I think they have a really good matchup against the Senators start. You know, the Senators have Brady Tkachuk and Stutzel, but Tkachuk has been hurt a lot of the season, and they're definitely a tier below a lot of the other teams, at least talent-wise. But I would be really worried about matching up against either Tampa or the Panthers in the playoffs. I just think they're both just too good.
Super seasoned,
and,
yeah.
You know, they have the experience where I think, you know, both Tampa and the Panthers could take them in the deep water.
Absolutely. So that's Toronto for you. We'll put them on that second contenders tier. Ottawa, I think, is a little bit straightforward as well. It's been a while since they last reached the playoffs. I believe that's 2016 or 2017. They do have guys like Brady Tkachuk and Tim Stützle, as you mentioned. Former Canucks head coach Travis Green is their head coach. That guy is absolutely incompetent. I have no idea how he took this Senators team into the playoffs. But I do think it's a bad matchup for them, even though Toronto are sort of the laughingstock of the NHL playoffs. I think it might be a little, the moment might prove too big for them.
Overwhelming, yeah, I agree.
So I think probably let's put them in that bottom tier long shots. No disrespect to the Senators. I don't think we think they deserve to be here, of course, but just not a good shot here. Let's quickly knock out the Lightning and the Panthers then, who are similar teams in the sense that they've got all these big star names. Lightning, no longer with Stamkos, actually, with Gensel, Kucherov, Vasilevsky, of course, and then Florida, same sort of deal with Tkachuk, Barkov, yeah. Bobrovsky, Ekblad on the defense, and then Hedman for Tampa. Both of these teams are going to be super evenly matched. They've faced off in the Battle of Florida the last couple years, too. They've been awfully close. Florida, I think, did beat Tampa on the way to the Stanley Cup last year.
Yeah.
I think Florida probably have a better chance than Tampa and making it far, but you never know. Honestly, these two teams, this is one of those cases where even though these teams didn't win their division, I could see either of these teams making it to the Stanley Cup final.
I absolutely agree with that. I would actually disagree, though. I think Tampa Bay has a better chance than the Panthers this year, and I would actually pick Tampa Bay to beat the Panthers. I think it would go seven. I think with Tkachuk, you know, being hurt, Aaron Ekblad, he's coming back for the playoffs, but he's been suspended for the last 20 games. I think there's just a lot of question marks when it comes to health. When you look at, you know, Tampa Bay, they're really healthy. They do have a really hard road in this playoffs against the Panthers and then most likely Toronto. But Vasilevsky has proven time and time again to be a top three goalie in the league. And I think especially in the playoffs, like historically, he's just been diabolical.
Yeah.
Like he's a monster in the playoffs. So I have a hard time picking against them.
All right. So what do we think for tiers then? I'm thinking, and honestly, it slipped by that Tkachuk was going injured into this playoffs. Same thing with Ekblad with the suspension. I say I'd put both of those teams on the tier two list as well, or tier two, where they're contenders, but they probably won't reach the Stanley Cup final for me. What do you think?
I think I would have the Panthers in contenders because I think if they beat the Lightning, I think they will go far. But I think, honestly, I think I have the Lightning as Stanley Cup contenders.
Okay, representing the East. All right, well, let's make quick work of it then if you already know who you're picking in the East. I'll tell you right now, I think I'm going to go for the, not the Cinderella story here, but for the storybook ending here for Alexander Ovechkin and the Capitals. I have them representing the East in the Stanley Cup. That's probably a cold take. The Capitals were not a very strong playoff team last year. I believe they did get swept in the first round last year, but I think they're really going off of this high of Ovechkin breaking Gretzky's record. They faced off against a very, honestly, don't be surprised if they make some noise in this first round, the Montreal Canadiens. They're coming in red hot, but they are super inexperienced. I think the Capitals just about nick it from them. And I'll be honest, hot take here, I think it might get easier for the Capitals as they go throughout the playoffs, just because I think that Montreal matchup in the first round is sneaky, tough.
I'm just honestly worried about the defense when it comes to the Capitals. I'm just worried that when the game slows down and it gets more physical, if they can, you know, stay and compete. Like, obviously with Ovi, like, everyone's riding that high, but and they obviously have a phenomenal offense, but I'm worried about when the pace of the game slows down. And similarly with that, our next, you know, matchup with the Canes, I feel very similarly about that series, where, like, I would be really worried if I was the Devils.
Yeah.
Because their entire offense runs through the power play. And
they seem like they're limping into the playoffs too a little bit.
And the Canes have probably the best 5-on-5 offense in the entire league.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be worried about that too.
Yeah, I would say that the Devils, while they have a lot of bright talent, they've been sort of going through quite a bit. The goaltending situation, while they have Markstrom now, historically has always been an issue for them. I would have the Canes moving on. I think the Canes have just lost a couple of names, not having Gensel there anymore. I know Rantanen wasn't exactly a super impact player for them, but not having him anymore either. I think the Canes probably missed their window last year. Probably a contender, but I don't think it's their year. Let's move on to the West very quickly as we're running out of time here. I guess, Brandon, you know what? Give me two teams in the West that you think we should keep an eye out for to make the Stanley Cup final, because there are quite a few intriguing teams here, but give me two if you had to.
I think, honestly, the Stars have a really difficult path, but they've just historically been so good. I'm making it last 3 out of the 5 years. And to the Western Conference Finals, at least. And they're so good. Like, in every aspect of the game, they're built for the playoffs. I have a really difficult time seeing them lose. Like, if they get past the Avalanche, I think they're going to make it to the Western Conference Final. I think that's fair.
Their first
matchup's definitely the hardest. Avalanche have restocked and are looking really good. But then for the second team, give me the Oilers. The defense.
Yeah, with McDavid and Draisaitl.
The goalie is questionable. You know, their goalies, especially with
Skinner.
Skinner has been bottom 10 in save percentage.
Skinner and Pickard
Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl have now at this point proven that they're phenomenal in the playoffs as well.
Last year they got unlucky. Yep.
They carried them on their back to a Stanley Cup appearance, and they almost came back from being down, 3-1?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be awesome to see McDavid win a Stanley Cup, and I honestly think this might be the year.
Yeah, quickly from me, I agree with your take about the Stars. However, I do have the Avalanche representing the West in the Stanley Cup final. I think it's about time McKinnon and Makar get another run in them. While the goaltending isn't the strongest, I think the firepower is just there. So I'll say the Avalanche represent the West in the Stanley Cup. But, and this is sort of going against what I usually say, but watch out for the Winnipeg Jets. They are the one seed, and usually the President's Trophy winners don't make a lot of noise. But Connor Hellebuck, goaltender, anything can happen. And they do have the star players on offense and defense.
I think fatigue also has to set in. Like, that's the issue with the President's Cup is
you fight so hard for it.
And then you see it in come playoff time. Like, you always can't make a deep run. And Winnipeg Jets are really good, but I just think – matched up against the Stars or the Avs, I think they're going to have a hard time because, like you said, I actually think this is the best Avs team since they won the Stanley Cup. And I can see them making noise. I just think the Stars are
a
difficult first-round matchup.
Fair takes all around. Okay, that is it for our NHL playoffs preview segment. Both NHL and NBA playoffs are going to be pretty exciting. In the next couple of weeks, so we are certainly going to be excited and staying tuned for that. As we reach the end of the show, we'll quickly touch on some quick hits quickly to Brandon over for a quick 30 seconds on Rory winning the Masters.
Yeah, it only took him 10 years, multiple second place finishes, almost blowing it on the 18th hole, forcing a playoff, but honestly, he got it done. Career Grand Slam, one of only 7 golfers to ever do it. Truly an amazing accomplishment. The last one was over 20 years ago when Tiger won it and was able to complete that. You know, I feel awesome for Rory. Like, you saw the heartbreak so many times last year in the U.S. Open coming in second. And it's just a great thing. Truly, truly history.
Absolutely. And our next quick hit, I'll give us a quick UCL recap. So the Champions League continues to entertain as the second legs of the UCL quarterfinals drew to a close on Wednesday. Though it did seem like every team in a favorable position going into this week's games got the good old check from UEFA president Alexander Seferin to give us a bit of entertainment. Well, it all started with PSG almost repeating the sad history of their historyless club by nearly allowing a 5-1 lead to disintegrate against Aston Villa. Didn't happen, though, as they moved on. Barcelona, while never really in danger, did allow Dortmund to make it a fight, with Ghanaian Dortmund striker Serhou Guirassy producing possibly the saddest man-of-the-match picture in the history of sports. Really do go check it out. It is quite sad. Then on Wednesday, we got a thrilling game between Inter and Bayern as Inter pulled through with Benjamin Pavard getting the game-winning goal. And Arsenal were really the only team to take care of business, silencing Madrid fans around the world, making them look unstoppable in Europe right now. Doesn't really matter, does it? Because they always seem to capitulate just when they seem like a threat. The semifinals will feature some great matchups between Arsenal and PSG, and then Barca and Inter. You ask me, I say PSG and Barca make it to the final, which would be a rematch of one of the greatest comebacks of all time back in 2016. But really, this UCL trophy chase has been blown wide open with these quarterfinals results. A la Madrid, eh? And then, with another soccer update for y'all. Meanwhile, in much more boring news, Liverpool look to finally seal their Premier League title win this weekend. Up the Reds, huh? They can win their second ever Prem title and 20th all-time league title, tying them with football's representation of Satan, Manchester United, if they win away at Leicester and Arsenal lose away at Ipswich, which is unlikely, but the Reds may want to get it done sooner than later so that they can shift their attention to a much bigger goal, returning Mo Salah to the Ballon d'Or conversation. Yes, folks, I still do believe with PSG winning the UCL and Atletico Madrid winning La Liga, Rafinha who? Mo is going to break the record for goal involvements in a single season all time, even over guys playing in the 42-game season back in the early days and all-time great Thierry Henry. Whatever happens, a historic season for the Reds and a great first season for Arne Slot. And yet, an intriguing transfer window awaits. Alexander Isak, please, we need you. Over to Garrett for a bit of an interesting quick hit.
Thanks for the intro, Julian. Brandon just touched on the emotion of sports a little with the Rory win. That was truly incredible seeing him break down on the 18th or on the playoff green like that. I want to talk about an emotion swinging the other way. For our many longtime listeners, you know I've been a lifelong Dallas Mavericks fan. And if you haven't been living under a rock, you know that the lifeblood of our franchise, Luka Doncic, was traded away from the team on the night of February 1st. There's nothing I can say about this trade that hasn't already been said. There's no criticism I can put on the Mavs GM, Nico Harrison, that you haven't already heard. So instead, I want to take a couple of minutes to speak on behalf of my city, Dallas, and thank my favorite athlete of all time, Luka Doncic. Here goes nothing. Dear Luka, you were taken third overall by a team that hadn't won a playoff series since our championship run in 2011, 7 years before you were drafted. We were set to say goodbye to the most loyal superstar of all time, and the greatest foreign-born player ever, Dirk Nowitzki, after your first year. We traded our first-round pick the following year in order to move up and take you. You had a world of pressure on your shoulders to deliver to a fan base that longed for success, and you faced all of this pressure at the age of 19 in a country that you had never lived in before and in a state that couldn't be more different than your home country of Slovenia. Despite all of this, you exceeded even our wildest expectations. You took the league by storm, winning Rookie of the Year in a landslide vote that should have been unanimous. The very next year, you took an even bigger leap, making first-team All-NBA, leading us back to the playoffs, and giving a fully healthy prime Kawhi and prime Paul George just off of Kawhi's title run a run for their money in the bubble. Not only that, you gave us one of the best memories ever with a buzzer-beater step back in Game 4 to tie the series. I recently heard from someone that sports are about moments, not games. Luka, you gave us fans so many moments of pure joy. I remember going crazy in a Buffalo Wild Wings when you hit that game winner on the Clippers, almost causing our waitress to drop her entire tray of drinks. Sorry, B-dubs. I remember watching Game 7 against the Suns in 2022 in the middle of my prom after party with some of my best friends from high school because we weren't going to miss that game for anything. Once again, you absolutely delivered by single-handedly outscoring the Suns in the first half. And just this past year, you again proved what a killer you were by ripping out the Timberwolves' hearts with a game winner in Minnesota over Rudy Gobert to go up 2-0. These shots and these games are something the city of Dallas will forever cherish. Luca, you never complained when we gave you underwhelming supporting cast in your first few years. See Boban Marjanovic playing 30 minutes in Game 7 against the Clippers in 2021. You never complained when you faced constant criticism from fans and the media about your conditioning and defense despite your consistent results. Instead, you carried the weight of a fan base's hopes on your shoulders like it was nothing. You made basketball so, so fun in Dallas. I had a prepared finish to this, but it's changed since just 30 minutes ago you did an interview with Malika Andrews where you talked about the trade, and you said you threw your phone after it. I'm with you, Luca. I was in my kitchen when my roommate called me and told me about it, and I pretty much started crying. I'm so sorry for what the Mavericks front office did to you and for the way they treated you on the door afterwards. But I hope you know that the city of Dallas will always love you for the countless fond memories you gave people of watching you find a way to win again and again, despite all the odds. I hope Los Angeles is grateful for receiving the league's most fun-loving, most talented, and most clutch superstar. While I may never be a Laker fan, I will forever be a Luka fan. Although it will be bittersweet, I can't wait to see the heights you reach in this next phase of your career. You're the reason I fell in love with basketball. Thank you for everything, Luke. Sincerely, Dallas.
Now that is sports at its best, folks. The raw emotion of it as we move into our predictions for this week. It is NBA playoffs themed. You already heard from our NBA analysts earlier what their picks were, but we'll go through some quick fire picks as we move into our first matchup, Rockets versus Warriors. I will take the Rockets in seven. I think the athleticism will end up being too much for the Warriors. Go Rockets. David?
Yeah, like I mentioned earlier, I just think the Warriors are going to have more firepower. I'll take them in seven.
Yeah, give me the Dubs in seven.
As I said earlier, give me the Rockets in seven.
Steph Curry, that's all I need. Give me the Warriors in seven.
The Warriors have experience, but they're old and injured, so I'm going to go Rockets in seven.
Perfect. All right. Next series, Lakers versus T-Wolves. I mean, LeBron and Luka, Lakers in seven. I do think it'll be a bit tougher for the Lakers than people think.
Oh, my beautiful, beautiful boy, Luka Doncic. Lakers in six.
Not even a question. Luka's getting it done. Lakers in six.
Lakers in five.
I'm talking about the man on... Because that's all you need, bro. If you're not on Bronify, get on Bronify. Best music out now. Give me the Lakers in five.
We got a clean sweep here, as I also have the Lakers in six.
All right, let's close it off then with a Nuggets versus Clippers matchup. I think the Clippers are red hot, and former Rocket James Harden is going to really step up in the series. Give me Clippers in six.
I'll take the Clippers in seven.
I'm going back and forth, but I'll stick with my prediction from earlier. Clips in seven.
Give me the Clippers in six.
I hate picking against Joker, but I think Clippers are going to win this in seven.
Get that man some help. Clippers in six.
Please.
It's not a clean sweep as Ian did take the Nuggets in six, but that will wrap up the show for this week. You can listen to us every Saturday at 8 a.m. right here on KTRU 96.1 FM or stream all of our episodes anytime by searching for KTRU Sports on iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Amazon Music. To stay in the loop, go ahead and follow us at KTRU Sports on Instagram and KTRU Sports on TikTok. We've always got exciting stuff in the works, and we don't want you to miss out. If you have questions for the staff, please feel free to DM us on either of these platforms or drop a note to our email, which we finally got emails, folks. Yes, we will be reading these in future episodes, possibly. And that's ktruesports@gmail.com. We want to know what you want to know so we can answer it on the air. Thank y'all so much for joining us. We love the NBA. We love playoffs. See y'all later.